This is the News and Talk of Nevada. Now, Bosma on Business with award-winning entrepreneur Mike Bosma. We're getting Northern Nevada back to business on News Talk 780 KOH. And I've been taking care of business every day. Taking care of business every way. I've been taking care of business. It's all mine. Taking care of business and working overtime. We're out.
Good morning, Reno. It is Mike Bosma, your business savvy CPA. Hey, if you're listening to my voice, it must be Saturday morning, 10 o'clock. Yes, indeed, you Garden Show listeners, you want to hang on for 60 minutes of action-packed business adventure. I've got experts, I've got entrepreneurs, I've got everything you might want to ever know about how business happens in the great state of Nevada. Today is no different. My business advisor in residence, Katrina Lofted-Wakel from BTI Business Broker. Katrina, welcome.
Thanks. Good morning.
Good morning. Of course, I had your husband on a couple of weeks ago.
You did.
Scheduling, I stay as involved as I need to be in scheduling, which means I don't need to be involved at all. I thought that would be an interesting show to have you and Mike on at the same time. It just didn't work out that way in the rotation. But
yeah.
But he did a great job.
He did. It was a great show. Loved it.
He did.
It.
Yeah. And I told him when I say the beautiful Katrina Lofted-Wakel, I'm really not hitting on, And he's like, no, it's good, Mike. She is. So I was like, okay. He's a wise man.
He is. He's wise. Yes.
How's things going in the business broker land? Things
busy.
Things popping.
Busy. Yes, we're busy. We have tons of buyers, some good sellers, and things are busy. It's
right.
Exciting.
So you're basically the matchmaker for businesses. Right?
I am. And I've been doing specific matchmaking things lately. So a lot of buyer searches, like, people come to me saying, go find me, go find me a CPA firm. And
okay. Go
which,
find me.
Yeah. Oh. You've said to me, I haven't found one yet.
Okay. That's okay. Some news coming up soon on that. So
good.
Yes.
Good.
So,
exciting.
Very soon.
So, great.
And stay tuned.
Yeah.
So speaking of staying tuned, entrepreneur in residence, David Williams from Aerovo. Now, Aerovo is a manufacturing plant up in Gardnerville. David, welcome.
Thank you, Mike.
So we always start our shows with a little bit of the elevator pitch, of course, for the benefit of our listeners. You ever run into somebody, a cocktail party, it's called the elevator pitch, but the elevators go so fast now it doesn't really work anymore. But, in essence, what you want to do, how do you, condense your business down to, if somebody's asking you about your business, you'd be able to say it in an elevator ride or, quick in a cocktail party. So if somebody said, David, hey, you're a business owner, tell me about your business, what would you say?
Okay, I started Aerovo Industries in the Bay Area, San Jose, Santa Clara.
Our condolences.
Yes. Beautiful place to grow up, though, before Silicon Valley.
Mm-hmm.
In any event, about 1990, we decided to move out of the Bay Area, the cost of living for employees and the cost of business in general, and we decided to look into the Sacramento Valley and ultimately in the Reno area. And one day, driving home to San Jose, I went through Gardnerville, stopped at the Carson Valley Inn there to have breakfast.
Yeah,
and started chatting with a guy at the counter, and he told me about this little building that was available in South Gardnerville. And I told him, "How do I get there?" And he got a napkin and drew a little map.
Oh,
and,
wow!
And so I said, okay, it's not too far out of my way. I drove down there, and it was an electronics building that had gone, a company had gone bankrupt and had been vacant for about a year and a half. And I looked around. There was nobody north, south, east. And I said, this is a perfect place for my business because we're in the chemical business. We need a lot of space and that kind of thing. And so I walked around the back just to see what the back looked like. And I turned the corner, and my God, there was a herd of wild Mustangs there.
Oh, wow.
And they all jumped up, and they started running, and my heart started pounding. I got back to my car and drove away, but on the way home, I started thinking, this is an interesting place.
No, that's you're like, this is so cool.
Yeah,
right? That's awesome. And you said you're a chemical manufacturing plant. What do you make?
Well, we make paints, coatings, lubricants for industry.
Okay.
We don't sell to the public, so you wouldn't find us in Costco or Home Depot and that kind of thing. But all the industrial people that provide supplies usually carry our products. And
right.
We do market nationally as well as internationally.
Okay.
We employ about 150 people there. And so we've been here since 1990.
Wow. No, I'd say welcome to the neighborhood. But you got to the neighborhood before I did. I moved here in 93. So I came here to meet you, Dave. No, it's just 20 some odd years ago. So 150 people. I would imagine, you know, we talk about chemical manufacturing. And I just, the only thing that is resonating in my head is EPA and government regulation. So I would imagine you would say, are you heavily regulated?
I think so. Without a doubt, it's a fact of life. And you can't ignore it, and you just deal with it. Mm-hmm. And so the regulations in Nevada are not that different from California, except California is more excessive. You still have the EPA, you still have the state. But we're in all the various product regulations that go with it and the finished goods. So we have two people that spend the whole day, every day, worrying about those, following them up, discussing them.
And that's where as I consult with businesses, one of the things that's hard for a small company is, you know, as they're growing, they're like, okay, once you get on the EPA's radar screen, you need somebody full-time to manage it. You kind of have to be the expert on regulation, and that's hard to do as a small company. You know, you've got two people doing it, so which means when one guy has a day off, the other one could be worrying about it. But that's we call it problems of scaling, and to be able to scale a business. One of the hard things that people don't appreciate about doing business in the great state of Nevada is there's not a ton of consultants. So, like, a lot of times, like, when you're in the Bay Area, as you were growing, I would imagine you're like, okay, as you grow, you hire these people, or there's a density of consultants around that can help you get them hired, get them trained. I would imagine there's not a lot of EPA consultants here in Reno.
No, there we hire a full-time guy in California,
right,
as an independent consultant. He's there with CARB and all those regulations. Mm-hmm. And being a part of some national associations like the Chemical Manufacturers Association, Paint and Coatings Institute, that kind of a thing helps us keep abreast.
Right. Because if you don't stay on top of it, the rules change every year, I would imagine, right?
Absolutely.
Right? So always trying to tighten them down. I would imagine labor out in Gardnerville, you got 150 folks. You've got to be one of the larger employers out there. How's the labor pool?
Well, it's somewhat transient, and that's the nature of the game.
Yep.
But we have a solid core of people of, about 100 people have been with us now, some 25 years.
Oh, wow.
And that kind of thing. So we pay good wages, and we have good benefits, and that we're very proud of.
Right. No, I like to say, great company. Glad that you call Nevada your home. Katrina, as we look at these types of businesses, and we look at, okay, what is potential exit strategies,
right,
either to buy or sell? What comes to mind?
Well, chemical industry is really good, actually. There's not that many people in the business because of the regulation, and the multiples tend to be high. So I sold Sierra Chemical in 08, 09. They had locations here and in Sacramento. I could have sold that 10 times over. So,
right.
So it's a good place to be. You always want to try and plan, obviously, always. But,
right.
But there's plenty of buyers out there for chemical.
Let me write that down.
Write it down.
Well, no, it's just because, like, normally it's, we talk about for a lot of service businesses, those things, anywhere from 1 to 3 times owner's discretionary income as a multiple. This is more.
He'll be over that for sure.
So, what kind of multiple are we talking about?
He'd be in the 3 to 6, I would imagine,
right.
just guessing,
six, right.
But from the number of employees.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so, is there any price or price breaks where if you get to a certain size, you get a better multiple?
Yeah, if EBITDA is over $2 million, you're going to get to that next level. If it's over $5 million, you're going to get to the next level,
right.
And then on from up there.
And the rest, as they say, is history. So,
yes.
No, that's just it. So, and a lot of times, you just get to certain levels of EBITDA. Now, EBITDA, earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, amortization. Another acronym is cash flow. What are you making before debt service and depreciation? Of course, the IRS came out with these new things called repair regulations a couple years ago now that I think is going to change the landscape for how people look at EBITDA, because in essence, I was talking to a client yesterday, And they've got an apartment building, or fourplex, actually. They've got a flat roof. They got to put a new roof on. It's $15,000. I said, well, under the old rules, you would capitalize that. And under the new rules, you're going to put that roof on more than twice in the lifespan of the building. So you get to write it off. And he's like, what? I go, yeah, it's changed the landscape of how capitalization policies work. And in a nutshell, that you capitalize everything when you build it and then write off most everything as you kind of keep it going. And it was really good. There was a ton of litigation in this area for years, and it kind of cleaned it up. Unfortunately, David, as you were talking about kind of the consultants on that part of it, there's just not a whole concentration of educated CPAs on that stuff in this neck of the woods. So I run into people all the time. They have no idea about this stuff. And I guess that's the benefit of having a good team behind me, because I couldn't keep up with it either. You kind of got to have a herd, as it were, of experts to be like, hey, my different area, this is everything that you need to know. And because it changes often, and when it does, it makes a significant difference. So, but that's where, like, on that, like, let's say, for example, my story, Katrina, if you wrote off the roof, you know, you're not going to add it back from depreciation in your EBITDA calculation. You know, I imagine it's too soon to start seeing anything in the market, but I would.
Yeah.
How do you adjust for that?
You know, we'll have to take that into account. So, we typically add all of depreciation back and then find out what the capital expenditures are, and then make a negative adjustment for that.
Right.
So,
for CapEx.
Yes.
Right.
So yeah, we're going to have to look at that too.
Hmm. Yeah, that's why people listen to the show. Like, I didn't know that. Now I know.
Right.
Cool. So, David Benenbiz in studio. David Williams, president of Aerovo, chemical manufacturing company out in beautiful Gardnerville, Nevada. Now, do the Mustangs still roam out there?
Yeah, they've moved a little bit further up the hill and the pine nuts, but they're still there.
Yeah, and I imagine depending on season, they're kind of migrating and foraging for food. I live in South Reno, and I remember when we moved to South Reno, my girls love horses, and so moved from Gardnerville. Real convenient in Gardnerville. Like, let me swing by. to go to South Reno and still have wild Mustangs run around. It's very, very unique and special for where we live and where we call home. But, you know, one of the things that, you know, we look at is your kind of building out this business model and hiring people out in that neck of the woods is, how do you create a succession plan? So now your son works for you, right?
Yes. He's actually president and I'm CEO.
Okay. So, and how did that happen? Has he always been interested in the business or?
No, I wouldn't say he has. When he graduated from USC, he had interest in going into the foreign trading business.
Okay.
And actually took a job with the state, the Secretary of State's Department in Washington, and worked for the State Department for about 2 years.
Right.
So he got to travel through Asia and that kind of thing, looking at projects. And he liked that, but didn't like the politics. And so he came back to San Jose, and I talked to him. I said, hey, come up and spend some time with us.
Okay.
And then we were doing quite a bit of export business at that time.
Right.
So he took over that, and it was a way to enter the company.
Well, yeah, and with his foreign experience, doing the exports, a very natural segue in. Let's do this when we come back. Let's kind of talk about handing the baton to the next generation, as well as business succession issues. It's our advisor, Katrina Loftin-Winkel, going to weigh in on Bosma on Business. News Talk 780 KOH. Welcome back to Bosma on Business. In studio, David Williams, CEO of Aerovo, and the beautiful and talented Katrina Loftin-Winkel from BTI, talking about establishing a manufacturing concern here in Northern Nevada. As we kind of toggle off to break, we're talking about going to that next generation. And, David, you had your son, he had experience doing some foreign stuff. You said, hey, well, you got tired of the politics, which means he has a soul and Mark's a good egg. Integrate into the business. Now, when that happens, if for the benefit of our listeners, if you know, I throw out this question, should you work with your spouse? Last week, as we were talking, it was the Divorce 101 show. If you missed that show, and it doesn't mean if you listen to the show, you want to get divorced. I am the biggest proponent of marriage on the planet. But I'm a proponent of healthy marriages and healthy relationships. So, but oftentimes, as I said last week, you got to understand what the ground rules are in the divorce proceedings to understand where you're, how things might go should that go that way. The example that I shared was a gentleman business owner that I'm very, very familiar with. And he, didn't have a great marriage. Wasn't terrible, but basically he got to 63 and his wife of 38 years decided, I'm done. And so the judgment that he ended up with was lifetime alimony, which I'd never heard of before. And so Gloria Petroni was weighing in on that last week. So go to KKH.com. People just need to know. How does this work? There's a bevy of information there you can go check out. But so the question I asked on Facebook last week was: is should you work with your spouse? So the question we'll post this week is: should you have your kids work for you? I've had all my kids work for me. So, but David and Mark coming on board's worked very well for you. How did you make that a success?
Well, it's not easy, and and some of the people that work in the company maybe make it harder because if you're hands on like I am, mm-hmm. I started the company. Both of us, you want to get involved in something, and people will come to me rather than going to my son.
Right.
So had to really find a niche for him, but he took a hands on approach to the manufacturing. And we talked earlier, or you were talking before the show about the regulatory issue,
right.
And so he grabbed a hold of that,
mm-hmm.
and that I think got his respect from
right.
the people workforce, and so he got. And then with the regulatory comes the manufacturing and so forth and so on. So I moved really into the sales and marketing
right.
part of it and let him take over that.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it's good as from a culture perspective to see the from the employee's perspective, you're like, no, this guy knows what he's doing. He's very hands-on.
Yeah.
And that's where I've just seen plenty of situations where the heir to the throne, as it were, wasn't that hands-on and was a bit of a buffoon, and that didn't go well. You lose a lot of good people that way. And Katrina, I'm sure you've seen all kinds of stuff.
Yes. If you get your kids involved, I always say get them involved as quickly as possible,
as soon as possible,
as young as possible. Get them integrated so that they get that respect, because
right.
that's a huge thing that nobody wants to deal with the son or the daughter mm-hmm. or whatever, because they just don't respect them and they think they were handed everything on a silver platter,
right.
which may or may not be true.
And
so,
that's where I'm a big fan too. Is believe me, when I'm walking around the building, the Boston Business Center, I'm picking up trash, I'm emptying the trash, you can see the video. I'm out taking the claw hammer to the roof drain,
You are, yes.
So, but the fact that, so when they see them doing those same types of things, like you said, David, they get respect, because they say, hey, I've done every job in this place, believe me. Now, of course, you got to get it so your kids don't rebel going through that whole thing, too.
Right.
Well, I don't want to do this. I remember there was a discussion about whose building it was. And I had one of my sons, won't say which one, but they're like, well, no, it's my building. I'm like, what are you talking about? It's the bank's building. they're like, no, it's my building. I'm like, well, why it's got my name on it. I'm like, well, I gave you that. But anyway, but so you be able to do it in a way to be like, hey, it takes a village. We all have the same name.
Right.
So the other thing, so that's good. So David, congrats on being able to get Mark integrated and running the plant. I would imagine it just took a big burden off of you too.
Yeah, it did, and allowed me time to get in more real estate, and
we bought
quite a bit of acreage there now.
Now, how many acres do you have out there?
Close to 300.
Wow.
Yeah.
Right. You can still do that in Gardnerville, right?
Yeah, well, not anymore, but and get it zoned, so it was all zoned industrial. So
okay.
I had that for about 10 years, and we've been now in the last 2 or 3 years focusing a lot on building, up a couple new buildings recently,
mm-hmm.
a lot of interest coming from California and
right.
elsewhere, and so we hope to make it a class one business park.
No, that's great. Yeah, if you haven't been down, you drive by. It's just kind of all, you know, this oasis in the desert type of thing.
We call it blooming in the desert.
Blooming in the desert. No, it's just good. People, like, you drive out there to the Williams Ridge Technology Park, and you're like, wow, you know, it's very, very cool what's going on out there. But I would imagine when you're putting that kind of building out there, David, that the infrastructure is a challenge. So talk to us about that.
Yeah, it sure is, and especially in the Carson Valley, beautiful place we all know to live and work and that kind of thing. But we have some real problems with infrastructure, and I have to blame the powers that be because they've missed great opportunities for a bypass of downtown. For instance, 395 is a great highway, you know. Yeah. We get about 70% of our raw materials from Southern California.
Right, just ship it right up.
Right up. We go in the morning, the guys are sleeping in the camper and are ready to start business. And that gets cannot exist through town. You go through there on Thursdays during the summer and Fridays.
It's packed.
It's packed. Yeah, it sure is. So we've missed some opportunities there. And when I got here, one of the commissioners was pushing a bypass at that time, 1990, said it's going to be needed. Well, Chamber of Commerce was against it because you won't have a local business, they'll drive by, and that kind of thing. And then they came up with this thing called Muller Parkway, which was going to be a parkway, not so much a total bypass. Well, that was started about 12, 13 years ago, and it goes nowhere.
Right, yeah, it's just dead ends.
Stops in the middle three times.
Right.
And so that kind of thing is not good. And also, you know, the structure of the GIDs, General Improvement Districts, and you're familiar with those. I don't think they're really created to serve business and industry, and we've got an awful lot of them in Douglas County.
Well, you know, that's where, you know, as we look at our current presidential election, and Donald Trump being very involved in politics, you know, gifts and influences campaigns. And the reality is this: as a business owner, particularly if you're a business owner of any size, you have to be active in this arena. You can't be passive, because I guarantee everybody that is active, particularly in the state of Nevada, has their voice heard. And sometimes that voice is a thundering boom. Other times it's a gentle nudge that is constant, and to be able to try, hey, you know, you really need to move this thing, move the agenda on this thing. And it's hard, though, because you kind of feel like, I know as a business owner, I just don't want to get involved. You know, I remember when I was walking out of a restaurant when I just bought Bosman Business Center, and I had some regulatory people that were walking in as I was walking out of the restaurant, like, hey, if you need any help, you get stuck, you know, and, you know, just give us a call. We'll get your project moving, which, you know, I wasn't savvy. I'm still sometimes half savvy. And I'm like, well, no, I want the same access as everybody does. I shouldn't, just because I know, you know. And of course, I realized I just threw them completely on the bus. I'm like, oh, no favors for Bosma, you know.
Yeah.
But it shouldn't be that way. Unfortunately, you just got to be able to push and like, hey, advance your own agenda, because if you don't, nobody will on your behalf. Which I think, to your point, David, is unfortunate, but it is reality. So let's do this when we come back. Let's kind of more about that transition process. Talk about exit strategy with Katrina, and also, you know, how to build a real estate empire in addition to your manufacturing empire. Let's do that. We come back. It's Bosma on Business. News Talk 780 KUH. Welcome back to Bosma on Business. Your host, Mike Bosma. You know, as we're grinding quickly towards October 15th, if you're on extension, yes, indeed, you need to get your taxes completed. Oftentimes, when I got through the September 15th filing deadline, actually September 15th at 1:30, I had a call from a client that was MIA, missing in action, for a year. And, you know, she had some business setbacks, and she's like, you know, Mike, I'm sorry, I haven't returned your phone calls. What do I do with my taxes? I'm like, you know, what kind of activity I have in the business? She's like, I really didn't have any activity in the business. I said, well, let's file a zero return. So, call came at 1:30, you got the return, a zero return filed. You know, right now the penalties are $100 per shareholder, per month. And so I was like, going, hey, at least file. You can always amend it. And a lot of times people just don't understand. You can file an estimate for your taxes. If you don't have everything dialed in when the due date comes around, you just file an estimate. You write it in. It's an estimate. Now, of course, the only thing that the IRS would tell you is, if it's an estimate, make it look like an estimate. So, you know, $629 does not look like an estimate, but $600 does look like an estimate. Just, you know, estimate or round, and the IRS can be fine with it. You can always amend it later. But the other thing I'd say is, I had one of our team, Shara Sur, who's kind of our QuickBooks guru and accounting information systems guru. go in. I had a client, actually one of your clients, you referred to, that said, you know, they closed down their business and they said, get a setup. We do not want to have accounting headaches. So Shar went in, of course, a couple of weeks, kind of for a couple of days, and got soup to nuts their accounting system set up so that their office manager was able to reconcile the accounts. Everything was set. And I was just like, going, why doesn't everybody do this?
Yes, one of my clients. Yay!
Yeah, that
how
was
exciting.
Awesome. We went through delivered the August financial. And they're like, this is where you're at, and da-da-da. I'm like going, had booked the sale, you know, the purchase of the property, all the rest of it, got the notes, you know, for the loans amortized, all the rest of it. Like going, this, it takes so much less time than figuring all this stuff out at the end.
Right.
Right. And now
which is what everyone does.
That's what everybody does. And I'm like going, this is, it wasn't free, but almost free.
Yeah.
And definitely less than if you have to
figure
it out later.
Less than if you have to figure
it
out.
Right.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
I was just like,
going,
this is how you should do this.
That's so great. Exciting.
If you're scrambling, getting your stuff to get your taxes done, you probably need an assistant to get your stuff done. I would encourage you to hire somebody to do that. The other thing that's going on, I would be remiss. One of the things we always like to do is promote what's going on at the Boston Business Center. Karen Jensen is on October 19th, has a series that she's doing for Lunch and Learns, handling a workers' comp injury / accident. Karen's really kind of rocking on these Lunch and Learns. You want to be able to tie in to Bosma. BusinessCenter.com or BosmaBiz.guru and see all of the different events that are shaken at the Bosma Business Center. So in studio, David Williams, CEO of Airvo, manufacturing concern in Gardnerville, Nevada. So David, I appreciate you coming, kind of sharing your journey. One of the things we look at as businesses, you know, a lot of times people just think it's all, you know, upside and life is easy for business owners. Of course it is. But what are some of the challenges that you're facing in your industry?
Well, my industry is size. We're probably the smallest in the United States that does what we do.
Right.
That is, we manufacture our products under our name and we sell them. So we're both a manufacturer and a marketer.
Right.
So we're competing against the Krylons of the world.
Ouch.
The Rust-Oleums and these kinds of people. And you have to find your niche. And sometimes that niche shifts. And so it doesn't stay static for many years because if they see you're doing well, they'll come and buy the business if they have to.
Right.
And
right.
During the recession, I saw that the first time in my business life.
Really?
Yeah, they bought distributors.
Okay.
Pie wasn't growing, so the only way to increase sales was to say, I'll take
acquire
all the product
share,
that's
right.
on the shelf
yep.
and buy it back and put my product in there.
Right.
And when you start writing checks for $100,000 and that kind of thing, it's almost impossible for me to compete. So we had to find different avenues, and that's kind of really the story.
Right.
It's constantly changing and adapting.
Right, and I think that's where as a small company, that's one of the things that you can do, but it doesn't make it easy and doesn't make it inexpensive. But you can, you know, change the direction of the ship, and that's where, particularly in your business, because it's a mature market. You know, oftentimes, you know, like as you experienced back in 08 through 10, you know, you've got these big manufacturers, they've got to keep the agenda moving forward. You got to keep sales clicking up, and you can buy market share, especially. And that's one of the things people don't appreciate with Sarbanes-Oxley. That really limited the ability for many companies to be publicly traded. Is the costs of being a publicly traded company are a lot, and we think about, oh, you know, protect shareholders, but really what it ended up doing is limiting access to the capital market. So it's just very, very difficult for a locally owned business to try and compete with the Krylons because of, you know, they kind of have unlimited capital that they can access because they have unlimited shares that they could sell, and they don't have to repay. It's not like debt that you got to repay. And so they want to go buy a plant. They're like, okay, we're just going to issue shares for it, and they kind of get the plant for free, you get the distributor for free because they're just giving shares for it. And they can do that tax-free. It's very tax advantage. How do you compete with it?
One thing it did do is make us look at more diversification.
Right.
And so we got into the safety supply end because we looked at our distributors who were managing the recession. Some didn't.
Right.
But they said safety is always an aspect. In an industrial marketplace, OSHA has these rules and that kind of thing. And so look at safety supplies. So that's what we got into the LED lighting business
Right. Okay.
and manufacture there now, too. And we got into the 12 volt products. We have our own injection molding operation,
okay.
So we can make those there.
Right.
And finally, we got into alternative energy with portable energy charged from solar panels.
Right. Okay. So, yeah. So that's what you diversify, and that way, if the aerosol market changes, you know, you're not left out to dry, so to speak. Right.
Hopefully.
Right. No, that's the idea. And Katrina, from a business exit perspective, how important is diversification?
It's very important. It can be. It depends on who the buyer is ultimately, but it is very important because that, you know, aerosol business could go away for environmental reasons. Who knows? So so to be diversified in what you're diversified in is probably really good. Is there correlation to the other products at all?
Well, yes. As I say, the safety part of our business, which is now about $3 million, and it didn't exist a few years ago, is a natural.
Yeah.
But we have opened an office in China, as a matter of fact. So we have two
Great.
Engineers there, and they're able to source some of our raw materials there and parts and that kind of thing. So,
Great.
And we're able to go into new markets. We make an induction cooker now. You say, well, what in the world are you doing that? But it's going to be one of the leading ones on the market.
Really?
Here.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
so from that point of view, it is diversification.
Now, David, you also mentioned you're starting to export some. How much are you exporting?
We export about $5 million.
Okay.
And that's excluding Canada and Mexico, so I'm saying overseas.
Okay. Well, one of the things that, our benefit of our listeners, remember I had a software company that I was talking to, and I was like, hey, great, very insanely profitable. That's why you have a software company, right? So it's just low overhead and just recurring revenue. But I'm like, if you can package this software and ship it instead of just do it via downline or just more of this license agreement. So they had a license agreement. They didn't sell their software. You just licensed it, which was hugely valuable from a valuation, company valuation perspective. I'm like, if you can package that stuff and send it off or send something, like all of your customers are overseas, like all of them. And there's a saying called IC disk, that interest charge disk, that you say if you're selling tangible personal property that's manufactured in the United States of America, more than 50% of it, you can convert, so the Reader's Digest version is, you can convert that ordinary income that you're making on that to capital gains. And so you'll cut your tax rate in half. And so as he was, it doesn't really work in our business model. I was like, well, make it work, because it's like one of those things, you're making $100,000 a year, or if you're paying $100,000 in taxes a year, it's going to save you $50,000 a year in taxes on that.
Yeah.
You're like, who doesn't do that?
Right.
And that's just it. And they made the rules fairly streamlined to be able to set those up. And David, you're probably right at the cusp of being able to kind of take advantage of something like that, kind of converting the ordinary income on that to capital gains. So, and that's where a lot of times it really impacts business models on, okay, what's the net after-tax benefit can I reap from this structure? And that makes it more advantageous to export rather than sell onshore or locally. And it, because one of the things that oftentimes is people are looking at growing sales, they look, are you going to grow sales nationally? Are you going to grow them internationally? And it's just the sad state of affairs is if you're growing in states, you're going to have state tax problems. You have potentially sales tax problems. It sounds like you got to deal with collecting and remitting sales tax if you're selling to the end user, if you're just selling to distributorships, and you still have to make sure you're getting resale certificates from all these cats. I sell this stuff offshore. I don't have to worry about it. I don't have to pay foreign tax as long as you don't have a permanent establishment. I don't pay foreign tax. I get this tax benefit. I wish I can package accounting services and have it qualify.
Yeah.
Be awesome. So
there's worries there. You heard about the steamship companies that filed bankruptcy, and containers that were offshore.
Right. Yeah. Now they're floating. Yeah, they got all their product on a container that doesn't have anywhere to dock.
Yeah,
right.
Right. So we had about four containers out there.
Are you serious?
Yeah,
so what happened with them?
Well, two of them in Long Beach got released. And the other, this is Hyundai. I don't want to mispronounce. I forget the carrier.
Right.
But the other two are still there. And they're in Southern California now, but they haven't been able to get to the dock.
Yeah, because basically,
wow.
I'm trying to remember the name of this carrier, but yeah, they filed for bankruptcy. Yeah. And so basically, there's nobody to pay the fees to get to the dock. And so the ports wouldn't allow them access, and they had nobody to pay to unload it. So you got a container load of product on a ship. Have you paid for this already?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so you've paid for it. It's paid for, but and so the wow, this is that's fascinating, because they're like, okay, I've got all this money in it. Now, is this a free on board destination or?
No, it was a CIF dock.
Oh, okay. So it was yours as soon as it left their factory.
Yeah.
So yeah, basically now you bear the risk to be able to get it here and get it unloaded. You've already paid for it once. Yeah. Are you going to have to pay for it again?
Oh, it was really frightening. There was hundreds of thousands of dollars tied up.
No, it's nuts. Okay, let's do this when you come back. Number one thing about when you've got a container load of goods on the ocean with nowhere to dock it. You heard it here and only here. It's Bosma on Business. News like 780 KOH. Welcome back to Bosma on Business. Your host, Mike Bosma, in studio. David Williams, CEO of Aerovo. Yeah, David, right before the break, I was like, holy smokes, you got four container loads of product that is going to potentially shut down your plant. And you got 150 people you got to feed. And I would imagine, you know, taking that crisis point from it's just this little problem to it consumes you, right?
Yeah, just overnight. You're planned and everything's working on a schedule, and we don't cut it day by day. But if we miss by 2 weeks, sometimes I could shut down a production line.
Right. Right. Yeah. All of a sudden, people, you know, and that's one of the things, where you kind of hope the government would be, you know, kind of got our back on that. And I just kind of feel like on this one, I felt they were kind of MIA on it.
So, I believe so.
Yeah. But that's what it impacts jobs. And it's like, hey, guys, you know, we have to shut down. We're going to lay everybody off. Just how that works. So we leave our listeners with the number one thing. I'm just going to, you know, kind of open it up, kind of free form. You know, Katrina Lofton-Winkle, business broker, BGI, number one takeaway.
You know, one thing we didn't talk about, I think, is if you do have your kid in the business and you plan on handing it off to them, is when you do that, to have professional valuation.
Mm-hmm. No, it's good, right? Get it valued, and that way there's no questions, both on the buy and sell side of it, and IRS feels better about
and
that, too.
Everybody stays a happy family, and all
right.
That's good.
No, it's a great insight. I've seen many. In fact, I got hired by a manufacturer out of Wisconsin by the daughter that was buying the company, because she's like, this doesn't make any sense at all to me. So.
Yeah.
David Williams, CEO of Aerovo. Number one thing.
I'm concerned about the tax structure.
Right.
We talk about schools, and it's on the agenda now, but whatever it is, Nevada's either 50th or 49th in that national thing. And people talk to me, and they say, well, what's that all about? I said, well, it's been a rating system, I think, that's accepted all over the country. When I moved here in 1990, we were 28th.
Right.
And I thought, well, that's okay for a smaller state and that kind of thing. But 50th and 49th, we've got a problem. And you see it in terms of day-to-day things in business. For me, it's applications. We got high school graduates, and this is not bemoaning anything other than the fact that they can have it fill out an application.
Right.
And spelling, grammatical, and that kind of thing. You wonder, what is this education? If their graduation rate is such, you may say it's 62 or 70 or 80, but what kind of educated person are you putting in the labor force?
No, it's very, very true. And how do we solve that riddle? And of course, I've said often on this show, we're a small state. We should be able to change the direction we're going and fix it because we're small. Just really need the legislative chutzpah to make that happen. And I'm not a fan of throwing more money at it. I think it needs more money, but you got to fix the infrastructure first. So, which, as I'd say, is my number one thing. Still have not fixed the tax code. I mean, they're going back out November. We're going to be save our schools, blah, blah, blah. You know, they just had this tax increase. It happened, modified business tax, now the commerce tax, and then they're going to do this other bond issue. And it just makes it hard to do business in the state of Nevada because you don't know what's coming next because we still haven't fixed the problem. We're still 49th or 50th. And that's where you're having kids in public school. I would just say emphatically, there's not a focus on education. And it's days off, it's half days. It's just like, you know what, just keep them and make them smart. So next week, speaking of being smart, next week we're going to talk about recalibrating the business for Alan Rock, Consigned Furniture, talking about going from pharmacy to furniture on Bosma on Business. News Talk 780 KOH.